OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities, a connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 232 for the week starting 26 August 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You can WhatsApp the show on 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about NVIDIA's new ray tracing GPUs.
Also this week, Telkom is very upset with ICASA over call termination rates. Nikon debuts mirrorless cameras to take on Sony. And with Apple's big keynote said to be just over 2 weeks away now, a look ahead at what to expect.
It's Sunday, it's 1 p.m. and we're live on live.techcentral.co.za.
Actually, we're not live today because we've got some problems with our streaming software. But we'll be back on live.techcentral.co.za next week. So, unfortunately, we're offline for anyone looking for us on the live site today. But the podcast is recording and will be up this afternoon. And it's time to talk, of course, everything technology. Welcome to the show. How's it, Rehout?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. Shall we dive in with our quiz on this blustery Sunday afternoon?
Let's do it. First question. Vodacom this week claimed it became the first operator in Africa to roll out commercial 5G network, albeit on a very limited scale. In which country has it done this? And for a bonus point, which frequency band is it using?
And which organization prepared a report on how much spectrum should be allocated to government's planned wholesale open access network, or WOAN? The report should be released this week.
Third question. Which country has banned Huawei and ZTE from helping operators build 5G networks, citing security concerns?
And MultiChoice will name the successful bidder to launch a new 24-hour news channel on DStv this week. What will the new channel replace?
And the last question. Which tech company has said this week that it's found evidence of Russian cyber attacks meddling in U.S. politics?
As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But what a busy news week this was, Rehout. So much on the go, both locally and internationally. But we're going to start with a bit of the international news. And that was NVIDIA's big keynote. I think it was back on Monday evening, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I unfortunately couldn't watch it live because I had another meeting to attend. But it was, I did catch some of it post-event, and it certainly was interesting. You watched the whole thing live. What was your take on what was announced?
Yeah, I was a little bit underwhelmed, to be honest with you, by the event compared to the previous one where it was more of an industry conversation, launch around the kind of industrial versions of these cards. There was a lot of interesting information around what light is and how it works, and the CEO went into a lot of detail around that stuff. Mm. I would have liked to see more performance-related, real performance-related conversation on it. They didn't really say, they were talking a lot about the ray tracing stuff, but not enough about, okay, so is this really going to have any impact on anything that we're doing right now? And my suspicion is probably not. I mean, is this going to be a great future-gen card until games kind of produce, the capability to really make full use of it? It'll be interesting to see what the performance benefit over the 1080 Ti is going to be. That's kind of what it comes down to. And that's kind of what I think a lot of people wanted. This is a very expensive card. Should we look forward to it or not? I mean, yes, from a technical point of view, we are. But I certainly would want to see some benchmarks and real comparisons before I spend money on that.
So they announced three cards. There was the 2080 RTX 2080 Ti, the RTX 2080, and the RTX 2070, which is the entry level of the three they announced. I put entry level in inverted commas because it's a very powerful card. I watched bits of the keynote, and I think I agree with you, Rehout. I upgraded to a GTX 1080 Ti. I'm stumbling over all these letters and characters. I upgraded to a 1080 Ti earlier this year, and I wasn't convinced watching the keynote that I need to upgrade now.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's no doubt that from a technical point of view, and what we're going to be seeing 2019, 2020 in terms of gaming is going to be phenomenal. Once this technology is kind of more broadly embraced by the developers, you know, just the way that they develop their games or the way that, you know, they render their games at least on those engines. I think this was a little bit underwhelming. But maybe we should ask the question, are we expecting too much? Do we really need a faster graphics card than a 1080 just now? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes companies need to take a step forward, take a bit of a leap. And like they said in their presentation, you know, they're taking a huge leap. I mean, that's a bit of marketing speak. But I can see if you look at the jump from the 1080 in technology terms or in technical terms to from the Pascal processor to the Turing processor and that jump in what the two cards are capable of. It seems like we're kind of on this brink of that technology generation jump, where this might not really affect us now, but come the game and tech support, this we're going to wonder how we ever lived without it.
If I had an older generation card, not a 1080, I think I would seriously be looking at these cards. But the fact that I invested recently, I think it's going to hold me off. Maybe I'll wait for the second generation even the third generation of this ray tracing technology. But I must say they didn't have a lot of demos, but the demos they had were pretty impressive. I was particularly impressed with the new Tomb Raider game. They had a scene, I think somewhere in South America, in like a street scene where with coffee shops and stuff. I thought that was particularly impressive when they showed ray tracing on and ray tracing off and the impact it has on shadows and the ability to do sort of real-time shadow. There was that boy walking in the street with a sparkler, and as they moved around the boy and as the boy moved the sparkler around his head, how the shadows moved. That was very impressive, I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at this in geek speak and really understand what this means, you know, not just looking at it from kind of, oh, that would look nice in a game, but what this really means for not just good-looking games, but, you know, potentially just the way that we experience these games. Because every little thing, you know, the subtleties, you know, if you have to turn off, on PUBG, for example, if you have to turn off the grass texture, the game just doesn't look as appealing or it's not as fun to play. Now, if you bring that benchmark up, and now everybody, you know, from a base level with this new ray tracing architecture is going to experience fantastic visuals within game. You know, now we've taken a leap in terms of what the basic acceptable level is of good gaming. And that's just in gaming terms. We're not even talking about CGI rendering using this for basic animators and then going up to the guys who spend a lot more on those industrial strength cards.
Yeah, you can do some impressive stuff with this. There's no doubt about that. It was a very technical event. I think I felt they could have spent some more time showcasing the in-game footage and that sort of thing. But there's no doubt this is a big leap forward, this ray tracing technology and the impact it has on shadows and lighting. And I'm sure we haven't seen the full potential of this yet. And as you say, the game developers over the next year or two are going to be introducing some pretty interesting looking titles using this technology.
I've got a suspicion, though, that, I mean, obviously not a lot of game developers have been exposed to this technology, but even looking at the Battlefield 5 demo they had, I mean, as impressive it was, it seemed very raw. It seemed like they didn't have a lot of time with the tech. And I wouldn't be surprised if NVIDIA didn't if there wasn't a lot of early access to this hardware simply because it wasn't ready in time or something like that.
Maybe.
So again, you know, we've got I don't even know if Battlefield 5 will launch with us full on. You know, that's going to be another thing to see, or do you need a patch afterwards, or I don't know. I mean, I'm really thinking out loud here. But just coming back to what you were saying earlier about upgrading to this card, I think there's going to be a nice market for secondhand 1070s and 1080s once some of those guys start upgrading, those early adopters start going to the new RTX range. So then it will be a good idea to invest in a good secondhand card.
Do you want to buy one?
I might be in the market, I'll let you know. Look, my 1070 is still serving me very well. It's a very great mid-range card. It's a fantastic mid-range card. And it's doing everything I can. I need to.
Yes.
But let's talk when you upgrade to that new RTX.
We all know that graphics card prices come down quite quickly after they've been introduced. So I wouldn't be – in a year from now, they're probably going to be 30-40% cheaper than they are now because these cards are expensive. I mean, the 2080 Ti starts at $1,000. Starting point. I think the NVIDIA Founders Edition was $1,100 or $1,200 somewhere in that ballpark. And I see some of the GPU manufacturers on a couple of websites here in South Africa. I noticed EveTech in particular, Pretoria-based online computer retailer, was selling 2080 Ti's for around 25,000 rand.
No, that's probably import grey import pricing as well. I don't know if it's officially available yet. Or is it pre-order pricing?
Pre-order pricing.
Okay.
It does sound like there's a bit of margin that's being put into that price. Quite a bit of margin, I would suggest.
Look, I'm sure the first batch would be quite expensive if you're bidding for a very small batch of graphics cards. And again, as the as they just produce more and as more people buy them, it'll be a good there'll definitely be price improvements. And second-hand cards is going to be – well, I would hold on to my 1080, to be honest with you. I think it's still a fantastic card. And I don't see any reason – unless you're running a big screen like you are, which for you it might benefit. But I'm still running a much smaller screen, not capable of running 4K.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, that a card like that is not going to benefit me at all.
Even your 1070 will power a 4K screen quite nicely. It's in-game where it becomes an issue, I suppose. Running games at 4K on max settings, even then, I think a 1080 Ti will struggle a bit on some titles. Mm. It's when you start to push up the refresh rates. You know, you go for one of these 144 hertz monitors at 4K. Well, I don't think there's such a product in the market right now. I stand to correction.
I don't think so.
If there is, it'll be incredibly expensive. But that's where we're going. We're going to high refresh 4K monitors eventually, and then you're going to need one of these 2080s or perhaps even the successor to it to power a monitor like that and have a proper in-game experience.
Yeah, and again, I think it's a great tech leap, but it's underwhelming because we're expecting a lot based on what we're seeing around in terms of current games. We almost want to expect just another performance leap, but this is a performance slash tech leap. Like when we went to hyper-threading, you know, with Pentium 4, I think it was, when it first introduced hyper, what multiple cores in the CPU, what is this thing? It's going to allow us to do so much more. And now we're really seeing the benefit when you're looking at like the Adobe suite of tools, where, you know, every application, you know, really benefits from multi-core threading. And I think in a graphics environment, we're seeing the same thing here.
So there we go, the RTX 2080 Ti. I really do want one, but that price is a bit steep for my liking.
They're all beautiful looking cards.
They're very nice looking.
You'll probably have to upgrade a few other things in your computer really to benefit the performance. I mean, you're going to want a high-end CPU. You're going to want the best motherboard and make sure your RAM is maxed out. Otherwise, you know, again, you're not really getting the full benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll watch the prices. They'll come down, and maybe I'll dive in then. But I've got other spending priorities later this year. I'm really eyeing waiting for those new iPads to come out.
What? Another Apple buy for you? That's going to be an iPhone and an iPad.
Well, we'll get to that a bit later in the show. But I'm actually more excited about the new iPad than the iPhone, but we'll talk about that a bit later. So, Telkom, I had an interesting chat with Sipho Maseko, who's the group CEO of Telkom, I think on Thursday this week, after the after ICASA announced that they were going to once again start to bring down call termination rates for those who don't know what they are, or just the fees that the operators can charge each other to carry calls between their networks. So if you place a call from Telkom to Vodacom, there's an exchange of money that takes place, a per minute rate, and that's set by the regulator. It's common practice around the world. They have been coming down around the world, and ICASA is no exception to that. ICASA had a press conference on Thursday morning at which they said that previous reductions in termination rates has had a direct impact on call prices, retail call prices in South Africa, and I think we have seen that, particularly the smaller operators taking advantage of lower termination rates to bring down call charges. So in general, I think they have had a good impact on consumers. But interestingly, they've announced they're going to continue to cut them, and they're also going to reduce the level of what's called asymmetry, which is the benefit that ICASA gives to smaller players to encourage competition in the market versus Vodacom and MTN, which don't get asymmetry. I think the level is set at 25% market share, if I remember correctly. So they're bringing down that level of asymmetry. They've always said that was the plan, and this is where it's going. So I got a call from Telkom to set up a meeting or a teleconference with Sipho Maseko to talk about this. So I got on the line with him, and he was livid, very, very angry with ICASA. The story's up on Tech Central. He warned that if ICASA goes ahead with what it's planning to do here with the pricing, it's going to have the most severe impact on Telkom, which he said is the strongest challenger from a pricing perspective, retail pricing perspective in the South African market. And it's hard to disagree with him there, because those freemium plans really are very good. But he said that if ICASA goes ahead with this, that Telkom may be forced to drastically cut its costs to the extent that the company may have to retrench up to 10,000 employees. Now, just remember that Telkom employs only 18,000 employees, so we're talking about more than 50% of the workforce. That may simply be a negotiating position from the Telkom CEO, overstate things with the hope that ICASA is going to panic and back down. It may also be a way of preparing the market for a further round of retrenchments at Telkom. I don't know. Sipho Maseko is having a press conference tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock in Pretoria to talk about this. So I look forward to finding out more what his thinking is around this. But he's talking doom and gloom, disaster for Telkom, basically, if these call termination rates as proposed by ICASA are introduced and the level of asymmetry reduced. He's particularly unhappy with the fixed termination rate being reduced. I think they're talking about by 2020 or 2021 reducing the fixed termination rate to 1 cent a minute. From somewhere around, I think, 6 cents in that region now. So big reductions in the termination rates. But I don't think the operator should necessarily be surprised, because we all know that ICASA is going to be bringing down these rates, and they've also said the level of asymmetry is going to come down. It's an interesting debate. I actually kind of thought the whole call termination rate discussion had moved on. You know, people are much more interested in data now than they are in voice, but it seems it's still a very big issue for the operators.
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting problem. Like you said, they should have seen some of this coming. But pricing is always going to come down in stuff like in technology like this, where it's going to continue being put pressure on by stuff like data. It needs to be bringing those prices down to make voice, you know, still competitive. Yeah. I guess
there's no doubt that these rates have come down very aggressively. If you remember, just 8 years ago, the call termination rate on mobile was sitting at R1.25 a minute. That effectively set a base price in the market of R1.25. That was very high. That was very high. Some people say that this unfairly benefited Vodacom and MTN. Vodacom and MTN say nonsense. It actually helped companies like Cell C. But it's a complex argument and discussion. ICASA is going to have some public hearing. I'm not entirely sure they are having public hearings around this one, but if they do, they're certainly going to be an interesting fight. I wonder if this is all going to end up in court like it has in previous rounds.
No, I know we can't really – well, we can compare them, I guess. But data and voice, there's no termination rates on data, right?
No.
Why does voice have it as opposed to data if we know the technology is similar?
Well, I suppose the difference is when you phone your friend on – if you're on MTN, you phone your friend on Vodacom – on a normal voice call, your friend on Vodacom is not paying to receive that call. However, when you make a voice over IP call, both parties are paying.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I mean, but then isn't there another model for voice then?
I suppose you could charge the receiving party. But it's not going to go down well at all. I mean, imagine.
No, it won't.
It won't go well down. I think the US does that, or used to do it. You pay to receive a call. But I guess that is one way out of the termination rate thing. Reduce termination rates to zero and then introduce fees to receive calls. But I really cannot see that working in the South African context, especially where there's so many poor consumers. In the mass prepaid market, it's just not going to work. I mean, some guy who struggles to buy 5 megabytes of data is not going to be happy if he has to pay when his employer calls him.
He's a sales
about
marketing
something.
Call. Yeah. Exactly.
It won't fly in this market. So
how much more would it cost me to phone you if you don't pay for the call, but I pay for that part of the haul as well? Shouldn't that still fall on me as a consumer? I mean, if we're talking
well,
about
this
is how he gets charged.
Well, it does in effect because you, at the end of the day, are paying the termination rate.
Oh, spread up. Yeah, you're right.
The operator's
so there's no real way. There's no real way out of this, right?
It's an interesting debate. I'm actually going to be recording a podcast tomorrow with Gregory Massel from Switchtel. I'm really looking forward to that discussion. They're one of the smaller players in this market. They're a voiceover IP specialist, and he's indicated to me that they're also unhappy about the ICASA regulations. So I look forward to learning more from him in that podcast tomorrow, and the mechanics of exactly how this works and what the different models might be. He is intimately familiar with call termination, so we'll speak to an expert tomorrow and get his views on it. But there does seem to be some unhappiness out there. Cell C has also come out and said that they are unhappy with the level of asymmetry. I guess they would say that as the smaller player, but they say they need more asymmetry than ICASA is proposing. Vodacom and MTN have said nothing about the draft regulations. I asked them for comment on Thursday and they have not responded, which would suggest to me they're probably happy. Rafael, are you
sorry? Sorry, you broke up. That's why I just got back onto it.
Okay.
What was your last part?
I was just saying that MTN and Vodacom haven't responded to requests for comment. I suspect that means they're satisfied with the regulations.
I guess I'd also ask a few other questions.
So. I don't know. But it's a story that's going to run and run. The call termination debate in South Africa is not done yet.
I guess everybody should just switch over to data now, and then we don't have to talk about voice anymore.
Yeah, the problem.
And we can free up all that beautiful spectrum too, and everybody wins.
Yes. Yeah, the problem is not everyone can afford data. It's a big challenge.
True. And coverage is still a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll take a quick ad break there. We'll be back right after this.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get Giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Have you been blown away yet? The wind is howling.
Yeah, I had to close all the doors and windows here because dust was covering my PC in layers. It's actually horrific.
Yeah, we had a serious gust just now. I thought the roof was going to blow off. We haven't had August winds this strong in many, many years. I hope it means we're going to get good summer rain.
Yeah, also not this strong in August for a few years. I think last year or the last few years it's been closer. You know, it's been more September where the weather has been. Just hope it brings a rain sooner.
Yeah. The wind is supposed to blow in August, and they say, I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, but they say if the wind blows, you get good winds in August, you get good summer rain. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is true, we're probably going to have floods. I know you've been looking at the story, Richard, and we did talk about it a bit last week, or the week before. But Nikon has finally officially taken the wraps off its high-end mirrorless cameras, and this is all about taking on Sony and mirrorless. And Sony, of course, is doing incredibly well in both the DSLR market and the mirrorless market. You've had a look at the story. Should we be excited about these new Nikon cameras?
Look, I think it's yes. If you're a Nikon fan, definitely. if we look at what the new Nikon Z7, I mean, it's firstly, it's long overdue. Nikon should have done something like this quite a while ago. They've been seriously lacking on the video department for quite a while. I actually yesterday played with the new mid-range D5600 from Nikon, and I was a little bit underwhelmed, to be honest with you. It's a nice camera, nice body, but in certain aspects, in focusing, and especially in the video, it just failed a lot.
Which model was that?
The D5600, the 5600.
Sort of entry-level type model.
Yeah, that's kind of their mid-range. But, I mean, the technology should still be sound. They should still perform beautifully. Nikon, I don't know, in my opinion, has just not stayed ahead of the market when it comes to versatile cameras. Now, Sony, on the other hand, you were comparing to, and they're definitely getting after that market, because Sony, with their versatile A7, and that's why it's such a popular camera, it's just an all-round fantastic video camera, and it's all for all-round fantastic stills camera, and that's why a lot of these production houses are using those. So Nikon is obviously trying to get back some of that high-end market, I think. The guys especially that do photo and video shooting, I think that's a big market for photography manufacturers these days, because a lot of these creatives aren't just shooting stills anymore. It really is that dual-purpose requirement, which is why all of these guys are going to mirrorless, because there's no reason to have a SLR camera that shoots video. That element, although it still works well for the photo side, it just lifts up when you're shooting video.
Oh,
so
by
taking out that SLR or that lens reflex element,
I think the wind is blowing havoc with your internet connection. So you were saying before the internet started to fall over there what were you saying?
Well, okay, so Nikon, I mean, Nikon has been behind with the digital video market for a while now. And if you look at modern photographers or the photographer today, and what they need to do is they often need to shoot video and stills. And I'm not talking about full-length feature films, but they do shoot video clips, especially for marketing and social media use and those kind of things. And that's where Sony has really captured the market. They've, with their high-end A7 III, that is a fantastic all-round video shooter and photo camera. Even Canon has been losing out to the likes of the Panasonic, even with their Lumix range, or I think that was the name. So it's been photography, digital photography has become a different beast, and with this, the Nikon's finally at that place where they're saying, okay, we're stepping up to the plate and we've got something for our fans. Even if it's high-end. Now, a new adapter, a new mount lens, a new mount, which is slightly bigger. It's called the Z mount. It's slightly bigger than the F mount. Obviously, there's going to be a use your old lenses on. But again, the reason for this is the new mirrorless format, you can do a lot more with it. Your body can be smaller. That the distance between the lens and your sensor can be much smaller as well. Now, that also allows you to do a lot of other things, potentially mounting any camera's lens on there, because you can just push your lens further away. And that's usually been the distinction between a lot of these camera bodies, the distance between the lens and that sensor.
Is that why they have to use a new
mount? Mount?
Why do they have to use a new mount? Why can't they use the Nikon F mount?
I wouldn't say that's why they want it. With new technology, a new mount makes a lot of sense, because you can, with a bigger mount, you can allow for bigger lenses to allow more light in.
I see.
I think they said they're announcing a 0.95 f-stop lens as well, which is obviously a massive, allows a lot of light in. It obviously gives you incredible depth of field. But again, we're talking about people that, you know, they're pushing the boundaries of creativeness these days. Is, you know, there's no more technical limitations to what we want to be doing. Even if there is technical limitations, you just push beyond it. So having a mount or having a lens system that you can push the technology further by the likes of allowing more light in, potentially adapters that you can fit any other lens onto, because like I said, because the distance, I think that's also the Nikon Z7 is the lens with the closest sensor. The body, and the sensor are very close to each other. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, but this is a fantastic entry. I haven't played with it yet. But looking at the specifications and seeing some of the comments, the focusing is another one of the big things. It's very quick and it's got a lot of focusing points. I'm just trying to find three focusing points. So it basically covers the entire screen.
Yeah.
So without getting it in hand, I 10-bit 4.2.2 video output, which basically means it's going to give. In fact, I think this is the highest rated sensor in that range in its market.
Yeah.
10-bit obviously means just better depth in color, and the 4.2.2 means the layers, the way that the pixels get read. It's well worth reading up. I don't know the complete technical explanation for this, but it's basically just how it reads. It just reads more pixels on the sensor.
Okay.
It's the rows, 4 rows, 2x2. So that's just how it measures the pixel rating. Well worth reading into if you're into that kind of thing, but it just means that the Nikon is going to be fantastic for people who want fantastic color out of their color depth out of their shots.
But these are pro level cameras and they don't come cheap. I think that top one was about $4,500.
Yeah, from what I've seen, roughly local pricing to be estimated to be is probably about 45,000 to 50,000. That's just more than the Sony, I think.
I think that's on. What are the two models? Sony. It's the Z.
Z7 and the Z5.
So it's, I think it's a Z5. It's probably going to come in at around 45. I think the Z7, if that's the high end one, it's probably going to come in at around 80-85.
Yeah, look, I mean, these high-end cameras are ridiculous. The Sony A7R3 is 56,000. That's body only.
Body only, yeah.
And that's kind of the high-end one that it's competing with. With lenses, now you're adding another 10 or 20,000, depending on which one you go for.
Yeah, I did see that there will be an adapter, so you can mount some Nikon F-mount lenses to the Z series mirrorless. Not all Nikon lenses are supported, though. But there is an adapter.
Interesting.
But I have recently bought a DSLR, Nikon, so I'm not really in the market for any of these mirrorless. I wish I knew these were coming, though, before I made the decision, although I probably wouldn't be spending 80,000 rand on a camera without lenses, to be honest.
Well, the question is, what, do you shoot more photo? Do you shoot more video? I mean, what is
more photo?
I mean, you're a hobbyist, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is fantastic. It is a new wave. It's every digital camera is going to be mirrorless in a few years, without a doubt, unless you have the old SLR keep using this. I can't see any manufacturer keep doing DSLR. There's no point in having that. The sensors are getting so good. So how big you can make that sense in that body. Yeah.
Anyway, our internet seems to be failing us today, which is a bit surprising since we're both on fiber. But Richard, you are starting to break up quite badly. I wonder if we should reboot routers. So we are back now connecting not over fiber, but over LTE, because Vumatel seems to be having some issues today. But hopefully the cellular connection is going to be stable. Quite ironic, right? But it actually sounds pretty good. So the last item on the list this week, and I'm not sure there's a huge amount to chat about here, and I actually put it on the list because Toby Shapshak from Stuff Magazine was going to be on the show today, but he's had a issue with a burst geyser, so he's had to go and attend to that. Toby will hopefully be on the show next Sunday, but it's on the list, so let's talk about it anyway, and that's Apple's keynote, which is coming up in just over 2 weeks from now, according to the rumors. 12th of September is the rumored date, although no official invites have gone out yet. I'm not sure there's a huge amount we can say at this stage. We're still expecting 3 new iPhone models and new iPad Pro models, hopefully, because those iPads are the ones I'm really keen on.
Yeah, the phones as well for me, I don't know. Phones have in the last while become a little bit less exciting. I don't know what it is. They just all seem to be the same. It's been a bit boring. So even the new phones don't really entice me too much. But I agree with you that the iPads have become, with the iPad Pro, we've kind of seen a different direction with Apple and where they've kind of gone back to listening to the pro consumer, the pro user, and what they want. And there's a lot of us out there who just want great specs, but also certain functionality that, you know, some of it needs to be pushed and some of it needs to be kind of stuff that we need to have in our machines every day.
Yeah.
But I think with the new iPad, we might see some of that rolling in.
And we're expecting version 2 of the Apple Pencil as well to be announced at the iPhone event. I think there's going to be a lot of focus on that Pencil at this year's keynote, because the rumor is that it's also going to be supported on the iPhone, the new iPhone models. And the new iPad's apparently going to have some sort of magnetic dock or something. This is all rumor, of course, speculation on the internet. We won't know until the 12th of September, but apparently it's going to be easier to stow the Pencil with the iPad. And possibly with the new iPhone models as well. I really like the idea of using that Apple Pencil with a nice redesigned iPad, powerful iPad Pro model, particularly with Photoshop coming to the iPad soon, or next year sometime. I think it's going to be a compelling proposition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, a lot of naysayers and a lot of people that don't, myself included, who kind of look at those things and say, but it seems like we're going back a step. But it's not the same thing. I mean, the stylus we used to use with our old, palm pad,
iPack.
The iPacks, yes. That was the first iteration of doing something like that, and it was terrible at the best of times. What you can do with the iPad Pro, and that's what I was referring to earlier, what you can do with that pen and the iPad Pro at the moment, what I've seen a lot of creatives do with that is beyond incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just pros that generally need that. I mean, there's a lot more you can do with it. We've seen with Samsung and their Bluetooth pens, and you can take photographs with that kind of thing. It's a bit of it's a small feature, but it's a handy feature for a cell phone user.
Yeah, for sure.
I look forward to seeing what Apple will bring in terms of maybe apps or, you know, software that allows more use of that pencil. A really good note-taking app, for example, still a good place in this world, still a place in the world for something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine Adobe Illustrator coming to the iPad and what you could do with it then.
Definitely. Look, you can already export vectors from most of these drawing apps and then import it into any other application.
True.
But it can obviously always be better.
Yeah. So I don't think there's too much more to be said on that, but we will talk more detail about the world of Apple in our next podcast when Toby Shapshak will be joining us. I'm looking forward to that. So we'll park that one for now. I would imagine that by this time next, when we're recording the show next Sunday, that the official invites would have gone out and we'll know the exact date. But the rumor currently is the 12th of September, which makes sense. And let's move on to our regular features. We don't have a winner this week. I really was trawling around looking for a winner, but I could not find one. I'm afraid there isn't one this week, but we do have a loser. So our loser this week is Mzwanele Manyi, certainly the proprietor of the media houses ANN7, or as it was renamed, Afro Worldview, and the now defunct New Age newspapers. Of course, ANN7 or Afro Worldview was taken off the air about a week ago, and MultiChoice is in the process in fact, they're going to be announcing this week who the new winner is or the successful bidder is for the new 24-hour news channel on DSTV to replace ANN7/Afro Worldview. But Mzwanele Manyi really did buy two dogs here from the Guptas, and not really a surprise that they failed, unable to get, you know, change in the government in South Africa. Zuma no longer president, unable to get the special favors in terms of advertising and the New Age breakfast that they used to run. So he really did buy a dog. I don't know where this leaves him in terms of debt, etc., but I think he's our worthy loser this week. Both titles, or both media houses, have effectively ceased to exist. ANN7.
Doesn't it also show you where the rot went, or where the money flowed?
Yeah, exactly.
When the streams dried up, or when the dams dry up, you know, when the streams dry up, the dams go too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's our loser of the week, Mzwanele Manyi. And what's your pick this week, Richard?
So my pick is the machine that I've been converted from. So, you know, I've been a long time Mac user, and then I switched because I needed something more powerful. And I've been using this machine for about a month and a half now, and it's the Alienware 17 R4. So there is a R5 out now, which is just a slight upgrade, but they're essentially identical in terms of what they are. But what a fantastic machine. Now, this is not your average laptop, though. This thing is a bit of a monster. I think you've held it in your hands once and felt the weight.
Yes. Bench presses
with this machine.
It's a mainframe.
But that's not... It's a mainframe, yeah. but to be honest with you, that's exactly why I got it. The thing is, this has got it's a powerhouse. It's got a Core i7. I'm just calling up the specs now. I actually forgot 16 gigs of RAM. The reason why I got it is the 1060. It's got a GeForce 1060 graphics card. So I don't necessarily need a 1080 for the video editing that I'm doing. The 1060 is plenty, but it also plays fantastic games. I've been able to play everything that I play on my main PC, on my desktop, on my notebook as well.
I was about to say, you didn't really get this for video editing, did you? You got it to say you could play PUBG in the pub.
Yeah, you saw the photograph. I was just going to mention that. Yes, the PUBG in a pub is exactly where I'm taking this venture of mine. Being able to video edit and playing PUBG in a pub is my dream. but it's actually fantastic to be able to do that. It's got an Intel Core i7 7700. And again, plenty powerful, running at 2.8 gigahertz. With a 1060 graphics card, it's got a built-in SSD of 256 gigabyte with a 1 terabyte secondary hard drive to store all the larger files. The other thing that I love about this is the keyboard. Now, I'm not a fan of a lot of notebook keyboards because a lot of guys take it in a lot of different directions. But this one, I really love the Apple Mac keyboard, and this has felt a very close transition to that kind of typing style. I really like it. The other thing that's pretty fascinating, it's very much a conversation starter as well, this Alienware machine. It's got pretty impressive RGB covering all over it. So, and everything obviously is customizable. So it's got two RGB strips on the top and the bottom sides of the case. So on the side of the lid and on the bottom of the body, and you can customize it. So mine's got this alien green, blood green color. And it looks fantastic, and that kind of color can run throughout the keyboard. The touchpad also, when you touch it, lights up, and it's got a full RGB backing keyboard that I can change the color scheme of. So basically, I mean, it's beautiful.
Basically, you've got a portable disco when you go to the pub as well.
Yes. Now, I take the body with me wherever I go. Now, on the topic of audio, the audio on this is also pretty impressive. When I'm sitting at home, I often would use this as a secondary machine to stream either something that I'm watching that I'm dictating, if I'm transcribing something, or if I'm just watching YouTube or a movie on this while I'm working on another machine. The sound on this is really good. Even for gameplay, when I'm sitting in the pub, it's quite interesting to see people's reactions when they see a gunshot go off. Probably not the cleverest thing to do, but everybody in the pub knows me that I'm playing this game with this bright, illuminated notebook. I don't think anybody can miss me. But in terms of performance, this machine is fantastic. Its rendering time is great. For 4K video, it works superbly. And then obviously for gameplay, definitely an all-rounder. Now, obviously, like I said before, it's quite a hefty machine, so you just need to be aware of that. It's nowhere near the same size as a portable notebook that the 15-inch you can carry with you easily. I actually need to invest in a different bag as well just to be able to carry this thing around.
It's luggable.
It's luggable. Yeah, I don't take it in a bag. I just carry it like it is. And again, it's a powerhouse, and that's what I want. You know, I don't necessarily want a dainty machine right now. I need something that can do the job anywhere I go.
What's the pricing?
So they go for around 30,000 Rand, depending on your spec. So between 29 and 35 or 40, you can get them fully spec'd. The R5 range now for about, I think, 60 grand. If you go for one with a brand new 100, with a brand new high res screen and a 1 terabyte SSD.
Okay.
So from about 30 to about 60, and you can get something that will suit your needs.
Right. If you're looking for something like that. I prefer lightweight stuff. Couldn't imagine taking the Alienware 17R4 on an international business trip.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, if you need to have a full-on desktop machine experience, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to lug your desktop with you. There's no ways you're going to do that. So if that's a need, I mean, if you want to just do writing, like in your case, you're not going to be editing video and doing high-end stuff. So. Mm-hmm. Words and photography editing, that kind of thing will be plenty. And then obviously a small machine makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's something nice to be said about having all that power with you wherever you go, especially when you're doing editing, video editing, because that's a constant demand for processing power.
Yeah. Has anyone in the pub wanted to play PUBG with you when you've been there?
Yeah, a few guys, but then I say to them they can install it on their phone and play it themselves. The thing is, the battery life also isn't that long, right? So I don't really want to relinquish – I do take the charger with me. The charger is also a fair size, but you know, that's not really about that. It's just having the portability. Yeah. It's really just about a quick game here and there. So I don't just sit there and play hours on end. Although they do have very good fiber, which is why I'm doing it.
Oh, right. Okay. You're not doing it over cellular. I thought you might have been connecting via mobile.
No, it's about finding the right places with the right fiber that's not capped.
Yeah, and the right latency. Cause that's important. You know,
it's not throttled. Not throttled, yeah.
And latency, yeah, exactly. So you don't get killed.
Exactly.
So my pick this week is a brand new app for Windows. It's called Windows 95.
What? No, man, that's an old app.
Seriously, I saw this story on The Verge earlier this week. Someone, I think he works for the company that does that business collaboration software called Slack. He's basically packaged Windows 95 as an application for Windows. So I downloaded this thing. It's a couple of hundred meg. You fire it up and it launches Windows 95 on your Windows 10 machine. It's a bit pointless.
Interesting. What do you do? What do you do with it?
Nothing. You can play solitaire and Minesweeper. You can just see what Windows 95 was like and how far we've come. It really was. I mean, I can't imagine ever going back to that software. It was groundbreaking at the time, but it is so horribly dated now. But it's fun.
How many hours do you remember playing on Windows 95, just discovering all those things when you first got it? I mean, it was a massive leap forward.
It was. And now it's just dated and horrible. It's worth a download. It's worth a download. Just search Windows 95 app and it'll pop up in Google. It's good for a little bit of fun and a poke around if you used Windows 95 back in the day. Nostalgia, exactly. I uninstalled it again pretty quickly, but it's good fun to have a look at and remind yourself how far we've come in computers over the last 25, 30 years.
Now, the question is, can it connect to the internet? Is it a full machine, virtual machine style thing, or is it just an app that's running independently?
It is. I'm not sure how they built it, actually. I don't think it's a VM, but I stand to be corrected. I do know that if you fire up Internet Explorer, it doesn't connect to any websites. Although I'd be surprised if it worked anyway, because, you know, the internet was a very different place back in 1995, and I suspect that if you were to try to browse the internet with Internet Explorer, what version of Internet Explorer came out with Windows 95? I can't even remember. Like version 3 or something.
6 or something? No, 6 was much later.
Much later.
Yeah, probably 3 or something. Well, that's why I was asking, because it would be very interesting if a whole bunch of Windows 95 machines started popping up on the internet. Obviously all very insecure. Because they don't support it. There's no update for it anymore. So even at whatever latest version this was, it would be very vulnerable, I would imagine. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. But I really doubt that old version of Internet Explorer would successfully load any website, to be honest.
I'm sure you can get a version of Chrome for Windows 95.
I don't think so. I seriously don't think so. You might be able to find an old version of Netscape Navigator.
Ooh, now there's a reason to install this.
But the internet browser doesn't work, so unfortunately you can't install anything. But it's a bit of nostalgia, a bit of fun. Download it, have a couple of hundred megs.
Cool idea, though. I like the idea. To preserve that memory forever, too, of what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, it raises questions about preserving old software like this. You know, I'm sure Microsoft keeps all the versions preserved, but shouldn't the software at some point by now have been released into the public domain and, you know, allow people to store it in libraries or whatever you do with old software?
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big debate. That's probably a whole topic for another podcast. I mean, looking at software and how, I mean, because even if you keep the software, you can't play it on a computer 100 years from now. It'll be useless. It'll just be bits and ones and zeros that you can read potentially in a different file reader.
Yes.
Unless you have, I guess, emulators that can, but who's going to keep developing emulators 100 years down the line for these things?
Yeah, I think maybe that the NVIDIA RTX 25,000 Ti extra, whatever it's called, will be very good at running Windows 95 and Solitaire and Minesweeper.
Imagine how many instances you can run on the GPU memory core alone. Yeah,
I think that might by then might cause a warp in the space-time continuum or something. Anyway, we are talking absolute crap. So I think we should probably wind up the podcast there. Remember, if you have any,
yeah, let's do.
If you have any feedback on the show, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za, and our WhatsApp number is 071-999-1111. And I've almost forgotten to do our quiz results again. Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. First question. Vodacom this week claimed it became the first operator in Africa to roll out a commercial 5G network, albeit on a very limited scale. In which country has it done this? And for a bonus point, we wanted to know which frequency band did it use? And the answer there is Lesotho, and the frequency band is 3.5 gigahertz.
And which organization prepared a report on how much spectrum should be allocated to government's planned wholesale open access network? And that report should be released this week. And that is, of course, the CSIR.
Third question. Which country has banned Huawei and ZTE from helping operators build 5G networks, citing security concerns? And the answer is Australia. And it also makes you wonder about where these guys are getting the information from, right? For banning something as big as this.
Yeah, it could just be jingoism. Multi-choice will name the successful bidder to launch a new 24-hour news channel on DSTV this week. What will the new channel replace? And that, as we mentioned in the podcast, is Afro Worldview, formerly known as ANN7, which was pulled off the air this month.
And the final question. Which tech company said this week it has found evidence of Russian cyber attackers meddling in U.S. politics? And the answer is Microsoft.
Microsoft, indeed. And that's our show. We're playing out with a bit of music. My choice this week. And I thought we'd play one of my favorite bands off an album called The Division Bell. This is a track called... What's it called? I can't find it now. High Hopes. High Hopes off The Division Bell by Pink Floyd. Until next week, from Rechel and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao. We'll be right back.
by desire and ambition. There's a hunger still unsatisfied. Our weary eyes still stray to the horizon. Go down this road we've been so many times. The grass was greener.